File 29.
1. It was possible to accept the French example and artificially restrict the number of births, thus avoiding an excess of population. Under certain circumstances, in periods of distress or under bad climatic condition, or if the soil yields too poor a return, nature herself tends to check the increase of population in some countries and among some races, but by a method which is quite as ruthless as it is wise. It does not impede the procreative faculty as such, but it does impede the further existence of the offspring by submitting it to such tests and privations that everything which is less strong or less healthy is forced to retreat into the bosom of the unknown. Whatever survives these hardships of existence has been tested and tried a thousandfold, hardened and rendered fit to continue the process of procreation, so that the same thorough selection will begin all over again, by thus dealing brutally with the individual and recalling him the very moment he shows that he is not fitted for the trials of life. Nature preserves the strength of the race and the species, and raises it to the highest degree of efficiency. The decrease in numbers, therefore, implies an increase of strength, as far as the individual is concerned, and this finally means the invigoration of the species. But the case is different when man himself starts the process of numerical restriction. Man is not carved from nature's wood. He is made of human material. He knows more than the ruthless queen of wisdom. He does not impede the preservation of the individual, but prevents procreation itself. To the individual, who always sees only himself and not the race, this line of action seems more humane and just than the opposite way. But unfortunately, the consequences are also the opposite. By leaving the process of procreation unchecked, and by submitting the individual to the hardest preparatory tests in life, nature selects the best from an abundance of single elements and stamps them as fit to live and carry on the conservation of the species. But man restricts the procreative faculty and strives obstinately to keep alive at any cost whatever once has been born. This correction of the divine will seems to him to be wise and humane, and he rejoices at having trumped nature's card in one game at least, and thus proved that she is not entirely reliable. The dear little ape of an almighty father is delighted to see and hear that he has succeeded in effecting a numerical restriction. But he would be very displeased if told that this, his system, brings about a degeneration in personal quality. For as soon as the procreative faculty is thwarted and the number of births diminished, the natural struggle for existence, which allows only healthy and strong individuals to survive, is replaced by a sheer craze to save feeble and even diseased creatures at any cost. And thus the seeds are sown for a human progeny which will become more and more miserable from one generation to another, as long as nature's will is scorned. But if that policy be carried out, the final results must be that such a nation will eventually terminate its own existence on this earth. For though man may defy the eternal laws of procreation during a certain period, vengeance will follow sooner or later. A stronger race will oust that which has grown weak, for the vital urge, in its ultimate form, will burst asunder all the absurd chains of this so-called humane consideration for the individual, and will replace it with the humanity of nature, which wipes out what is weak in order to give place to the strong. Any policy which aims at securing the existence of a nation by restricting the birth rate robs that nation of its future. 2. A second solution is that of internal colonization. This is a proposal which is frequently made in our own time, and one hears it lauded a good deal. It is a suggestion that is well meant, but is misunderstood by most people, so that it is the source of more mischief than can be imagined. It is certainly true that the productivity of the soil can be increased within certain limits, but only within defined limits, and not indefinitely. By increasing the productive powers of the soil, it will be possible to balance the effect of a surplus birth rate in Germany for a certain period of time, without running any danger of hunger. But we have to face the fact that the general standard of living is rising more quickly than even the birth rate. The requirements of food and clothing are becoming greater from year to year, and are out of proportion to those of our ancestors of, let us say, 100 years ago. It would therefore be a mistaken view that every increase in the productive powers of the soil will supply the requisite conditions for an increase in the population. No, that is true up to a certain point only, for at least a portion of the increased produce of the soil will be consumed by the margin of increased demands caused by the steady rise in the standard of living. But even if these demands were to be curtailed to the narrowest limits possible, and if, at the same time, we were to use all our available energies in the intense cultivation, we should here reach a definite limit, which is conditioned by the inherent nature of the soil itself. No matter how industriously we may labour, we cannot increase agricultural production beyond this limit. Therefore, though we may postpone the evil hour of distress for a certain time, it will arrive at last. The first phenomenon will be the recurrence of famine periods from time to time, after bad harvests, etc. The intervals between these famines will become shorter and shorter the more the population increases. And finally, the famine times will disappear only in those rare years of plenty when the granaries are full. And a time will ultimately come when even in those years of plenty there will be not enough to go round, so that hunger will dog the footsteps of the nation. Nature must now step in once more, and select those who are to survive, or else man will help himself by artificially preventing his own increase, with all the fatal consequences for the race and the species, which have already been mentioned. It may be objected here that, in one form or another, this future is in store for all mankind, and that the individual nation or race cannot escape the general fate. At first glance, that objection seems logical enough, but we have to take the following into account. The day will certainly come when the whole of mankind will be forced to check the augmentation of the human species, because there will be no further possibility of adjusting the productivity of the soil to the perpetual increase in the population. Nature must then be allowed to use her own methods, or man may possibly take the task of regulation into his own hands, and establish the necessary equilibrium by the application of better means than we have at our disposal today. But then it will be a problem for mankind as a whole. Whereas now, only those races have to suffer from want, which no longer have the strength and daring to acquire sufficient soil to fulfil their needs. For as things stand today, vast spaces still lie uncultivated all over the surface of the globe. Those spaces are only waiting for the ploughshare. And it is quite certain that nature did not set those territories apart as the exclusive pastures of any one nation or race to be held unutilized in reserve for the future. Such land awaits the people who have the strength to acquire it and the diligence to cultivate it. Nature knows no political frontiers. She begins by establishing life on this globe, and then watches the free play of forces. Those who show the greatest courage and industry are the children nearest to her heart, and they will be granted the sovereign right of existence. If a nation confines itself to internal colonization, while other races are perpetually increasing their territorial annexations all over the globe, that nation will be forced to restrict the numerical growth of its population at a time when the other nations are increasing theirs. This situation must eventually arrive. It will arrive soon if the territory which the nation has at its disposal be small. Now, it is unfortunately true that only too often the best nations, or to speak more exactly, the only really cultured nations, who at the same time are the chief bearers of human progress, have decided, in their blind pacifism, to refrain from the acquisition of new territory, and to be content with internal colonization. But at the same time, nations of inferior quality succeed in getting hold of large spaces for colonization all over the globe. The state of affairs which must result from this contrast is the following. Races which are culturally superior, but less ruthless, would be forced to restrict their increase because of insufficient territory to support the population, while less civilized races could increase indefinitely, owing to the vast territories at their disposal. In other words, should that state of affairs continue, then the world will one day be possessed by that portion of mankind which is culturally inferior, but more active and energetic. A time will come, even though in the distant future, when there can only be two alternatives. Either the world will be ruled according to our modern concept of democracy, and then every decision will be in favour of the numerically stronger races, or the world will be governed by the law of natural distribution of power, and then those nations will be victorious who are of more brutal will and are not the nations who have practiced self-denial. Nobody can doubt that this world will one day be the scene of dreadful struggles for existence on the part of mankind. In the end, the instinct of self-preservation alone will triumph. Before its consuming fire, this so-called humanitarianism, which connotes only a mixture of fatuous timidity and self-conceit, will melt away as under the March sunshine. Man has become great through perpetual struggle. In perpetual peace, his greatness must decline.